Good morning and welcome back to another episode of the AI Integration Center podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Lieutenant Colonel David Paddock. I'm joined today by Captain Bryce Wilkins. He's a graduate of the AI Scholar Program here at Carnegie Mellon in AI2C. He's currently serving as an ORSA at the Center for Army Analysis. Today, we're going to be discussing what is an AI team and what does it take to have a functioning AI team in the Army specifically. Bryce, thanks for being here today. It's great having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what can you tell me? Because you have experience not just in the center, but experience having left the center and taking that into the Army as an ORSA. Tell me what makes an AI team in the Army work and what makes it different than what we might see as in the civilian sector.
Some of the things that make an AI team are talent. And so you need to have the right people on the team that can do data engineering, scoping, machine learning, operations, DevSecOps, security. So you need to have all of that internal talent. But then another part of it is leadership. So wherever that AI team falls within an organization, there needs to be people who understand how to use that talent appropriately, people who can resource appropriately for that team, people who can sponsor the right types of projects that lend themselves to AI and also provide high impact for the organization to put the team in places where they can succeed. And so it's a combination of internal team talent, but also being in an organization that allows a team to succeed.
So you brought up something really interesting on those different skill sets, because it's probably not reasonable to expect that every person is going to have all of the skill sets in order to plug and play. And so it sounds like an AI team is made up of position players, where people are going to have a particular skill set and they're going to plug into that team. And if you have enough people, but you don't have people playing at the right positions, you're not going to have a team that would function as well as it would if you had the right skill sets.
It is interesting. I actually don't view the teammates as necessarily being like fully modular, like, you know, you're a single expert in just data engineering or a single expert in just DevSecOps. I think that you need to have broad exposure across all of the disciplines, but you should specialize in one. So people who can contribute across the various disciplines and have experience in all of them, but expertise in a single one, are the ones who are most equipped to contribute to an AI team.
Now, in the Army, that makes it a little bit interesting because we don't always get those particular skill sets we're looking for. And as a relatively new field, we haven't really developed the ASIs yet that might be tied to that. So somebody coming from the AI Integration Center, for instance, may be a domain expert or maybe a data engineer, but we haven't yet really identified all of the ways to identify who has what particular skill sets. How do we deal with integrating those new members into a team once they get out into the force?
Yes, yeah. I think that because this is a new field within the Army, that we are lacking some types of standardization. And so we talk about what these jobs entail, like data engineer and domain expert, DevSecOps. We talk about broadly what they are, but there isn't actually like any type of standardization in terms of like what are the actual core competencies of those particular people. And so you have to still be in a mode of like a startup or founder mode, where you go onto a team and you have the experience that you have from your previous organization or any other training or education that you have, but it's about filling the gap that exists on that team. So, and that's why it's important to have the broad skill sets, because the team that you're most likely going to be joining may have a particular skill gap in one area. And if you can fill that, then that's great. But the best way to be able to integrate is going to be having experience across each of those different parts of the AI development process.
So you discussed quite a few different critical roles, right? You mentioned the domain expert, data engineer, DevSecOps, security. Let's do a little bit of a deep dive into what those positions are and what we're looking for within the individuals who are filling those positions. So when we talk about data engineer, what are we really looking at in an AI team?
Data engineer is going to be one of the most important roles, particularly just because getting access to data in Army settings can be very difficult. Some of that's due to old technology. Some of it's due to policies. Some of it, well, we encounter data issues right now that I see that relate to both those technology issues and policy issues. Like if you're working with data that is held by the program managers and the PAEs, they can be very protective about their data. That's one of the issues. And a data engineer would be one of the people that would have to work with those types of people to even first get access to data. So that's one part of it. And the second part is that once you have access using technology to be able to transmit data seamlessly from source to the place where you're going to end up using it, if you're going to be using data in the denied environments or degraded environments, that prevents its own types of complications that data engineers have to work through. You manage to invent unique ways to get data in tranches when network connectivity is available, and then how do you store it and then further get it to the place where you have edge compute power or anything like that. So the data engineering role is very important, and it involves navigating policy hurdles, which is why some of that, like I said at the very beginning, where you have the internal AI talent team, but then you have the leadership that's there that can help navigate some of those policy problems. But then there's also the technology problems of the operating in degraded environments, getting the, in order to get the data from where it is to where you need it to be. So that's the data engineer role. The domain expert role, this is one of the most important ones as well, just because especially people who have spent time in the AI2C, for example, you can spend between 4 and 5 years getting great skills working with AI, but those are 4 or 5 years that are not necessarily in basic branch or an operational part of the Army. In order to make sure that you can actually deliver value to those people, you need to have domain experts on the team who can help scope the problem, make sure that the solution you are building as an AI team is actually going to meet the problem that the operational force or person or unit has. And they also can help translate between the AI technician, the talent there on the team, and the people who are sponsoring the work or who need the product that's being worked on. So the domain expert has a lot of role there. And then there are other roles, the DevSecOps people, you need to be able to implement CI/CD pipelines so you can deliver continuous updates to the product that you're making, because inevitably you'll get user feedback as whatever you're making grows in popularity or usefulness, you will inevitably grow your user base. They'll have feedback. And so people who specialize in that continuous integration, continuous delivery pipeline, and who can implement unit tests, all these things that you need, the infrastructure that you need to make sure that you can provide updates without breaking it so that people can still have access to it and continue to grow the capability over time. That's an important role.
So let's dive a little bit deeper on this data engineer, because you hinted at something that I thought was really interesting, and it's probably something that we don't see as much in the civilian sector, where you talk about contested data and dealing with data that is coming across different operational domains. Maybe it's on a classified network, or it's going to have to be received in tranches because of limited availability and edge compute. That's not something that the civilian sector is dealing with in the same way. So it feels like there's both an academic knowledge set that has to be gained in how to do the data engineering, but there's also a unique military problem that has to get solved in how we manage access to that data, how we receive it, and a little bit of a network understanding that's very different than we're going to be seeing in the civilian sector. Is that a good way to look at this problem?
Yes, and that is one of the unique problems to the Army AI area, is the networks that these things operate on. So whether it's SIPR JWIGs or higher, there's availability to data. And as you get to increasingly small compartments, again, being able to access that kind of data, it comes with its own sets of bureaucracy, being read on to various programs, could take months up to a year. So there's that issue of the being able to actually get access to the data. And then once you have that, then it's the technical question of getting that data from its very, very secure, heavily protected, monitored place to a place where you can build technology that uses that data, which is another problem because a lot of these networks don't actually have a great compute infrastructure. So once you get the data, can you actually do something with it, present its own problem? And all of those are the issues that the data engineer touches.
So discussing that, when we talked about the DevSecOps, and you mentioned that as the product matures and the user base grows, there's feedback that needs to be considered. You know, in the civilian sector, you hear the common phrase, move fast and break things. But in the military sector, we want to move fast, adopt quickly. But breaking things comes with real national security risk. It comes with risk to the operator. It comes to risk to the soldiers. And so it seems like that we're having to adopt these products early in order to use them. But there's a heavy burden that's placed on that DevSecOps to make sure that we're moving fast and we're not breaking things.
Yeah, reliability, it has a certain premium in the Army that doesn't necessarily exist in other commercial settings. Certainly there are commercial settings where reliability is very important as well, but it's a special consideration for Army products because do depend on whatever you've put in front of them. And as soon as you do put something in front of them, then they're going to immediately assume they will always be available to them. And so especially as they integrate it into their workflows and grow over time to become more dependent on it. So as you see that happening, that's where DevSecOps becomes increasingly important because people will be putting in requests to grow the product in various ways to expand its capabilities. But the core capabilities that have already been published and are out and being used and are part of people's workflows need to always be available as other development is going on in parallel. And so those DevSecOps people and that kind of capability allows you to maintain the current offering, keep it available for people who have already integrated it while still adding on over time other capabilities to it so that you can make it more functional for the people that are using it.
When you mentioned the domain expert, you mentioned this is the person who understands how the output of that product is going to be used. So I think about this as a unit's S3 or G3. They know that a product is going to have an output and they want that output because it's somehow going to drive a decision cycle or it's going to be an input to a decision point. How important is it that that domain expert understands the AI process? And is there a difference between understanding the process and having a good understanding of what that desired output is?
It's important for the domain expert to understand the AI capability, and it's important for them to understand probably the main roles that are on a team, just so they can know what is possible. I don't think they actually have to be AI experts in order to be effective on the AI team as the domain expert. Their value really comes from understanding the problem and making sure that the solution that is being talked about among the people who do have expertise in the various AI disciplines is going to meet the problem as they understand it. And so they need to understand the AI capability in order to make sure that they are accurately communicating with a sponsor what a solution could look like. And most importantly, they need to understand what the actual problem is, because delivering an AI capability that doesn't actually solve a problem doesn't actually help anybody. And so they have to marry those two things together.
Well, that's good to hear. And it puts things in a little bit of a different perspective, because everybody who's been on staff at some point has heard somebody tell them, I don't know what I want, but I'll know it when I see it. And if we're working through this AI-enabled process and machine learning, it sounds like it's going to be really important to have a very clear understanding of what that desired end state is and be able to communicate that. And that's a big role of that domain expert, if I'm hearing you correctly, is not only understanding what it is that they want to inform that decision cycle, but communicate that to the rest of the team who has a depth of knowledge of AI and machine learning, but may not have the same depth of knowledge on how decisions are made or what the decision cycle is or what criteria decision makers are considering. And so there's a different level of knowledge that's going into that there.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's two skills, equally important. Both have to be conversational in the other, but you really do need a good domain expert is likely not going to be a good AI expert. And similarly, good AI experts, probably by virtue of the fact that they have been training for several years in this, may not have as much domain expertise, or at least current domain expertise. And that's where they work very well together, and you need both.
How would you define the difference between the domain expert who's part of that AI team and the leadership? Because when you started, you mentioned it's really important to have the right leadership, to find the right projects, and make sure that the AI team is nested with the staff. What's the difference between the leadership that an AI team is looking for and the domain expert who is providing that contextual understanding of how the product is going to integrate with the decision cycle?
So I'll give an example for talking about the leadership. One of the, I think, successful examples of one of the operational data teams that we've seen at headquarters, Jill Donahue is very directly involved in the management of that team. And so he's able to provide a lot of solutions to those policy problems and making sure that you're working on the right problems, all of those potential issues that AI teams can encounter. Strong leadership like that is able to help mitigate those things very early. And so a lot of the barriers to entry to actually working on AI projects can be taken away by people like that. In the USRF ODT, there are layers in between the actual team. They have a leader, and then they report to the chief of staff, and then but like that very streamlined relationship is what allows them to be very effective in delivering AI solutions that meet the commander's intent and deliver actual value to various staff processes. So that part is the leadership and policy part. The domain expert fits into this as a day-to-day person who can give the refining input as the practice being made. As a developer thinking something, hey, is this useful? Yes or no, the domain expert can weigh in on that. And then actually doing the more constant feedback and iteration. And the domain expert could be someone who's going to be an end user of this thing, or it could be someone who is sponsoring or championing the product. But yeah, that's the role of the domain expert. And they interact with the leadership. They're a way of communicating between the developers and the leadership, although I think AI teams are in general relatively flat, but they're able to communicate more in the same language sometimes as some of the people who are in leadership positions. And so that's the way that I see the domain expert and the leadership and AI team all interacting together.
So you mentioned that it's a relatively flat team. So is that a common dynamic that would be expected? And how does that team work in a flat organization? Because that's not how typical Army organizations are set up, right? Where we tend to be a very hierarchical organization. Somebody works for somebody else, and it's pretty clear how that team operates. But AI and machine learning is coming from a different set of skills, and it's blending in some of the tech culture with that. How does that influence and impact those team dynamics?
I do think they are flat organizations, and that's why when we talked at the very beginning about the various roles, data engineer, ML engineer, DevSecOps, all those things we didn't talk about, you know, ranks with associated with any of those things. It's capabilities and not necessarily ranks. And so the flatness comes in the fact that if you think about what the AI team needs to produce, we talk about, you know, how do you integrate new people into these teams? It's just capability driven. It's who is the person who has the ability to perform the task that is needed. And the rank is not a determining factor in that consideration. And so now some things like leading one of these teams, rank would be an important thing there, but that would be based off of experience, that person having been previously on a data team of some kind, then coming with the operational and AI experience to be able to lead a diverse team, like an AI team. But for the most part, I think that these organizations primarily operate in a very flat fashion. It's basically just because it's entirely capability driven and who has the capabilities that are needed to fill the holes on the team.
So speaking about that, I think you really hit on something important where it's talent and specialization driven more than it is rank driven. It can be difficult to find those skill sets in the Army, and we're in competition with the civilian sector. You know, we maintain an all-volunteer Army, makes us very unique in the globe, especially for the scope of our military. But it also means that the soldiers who are in are weighing their options for the service against the civilian sector. How does that work, and how do we find ways to maintain talent so that we have the right teams that are able to deliver results to the operational force?
The ADSO is an effective retention tool. And so if someone goes to school to get AI expertise and then owes between 5 and 6 years after that and does a 2 or 3 year utilization and then has another 2 or 3 years remaining. So there's a policy part that is an effective way for keeping AI talent in the short term. I think the long-term solution for retaining people after the ADSO expires is making sure that they are put in positions where they have an opportunity to have impact. And so some of that is the establishment of operational data teams where that kind of talent is being cultivated and there's some infrastructure in place in order for people with those skill sets and backgrounds to succeed. So that's one piece, that there are various landing places in the Army where they can apply their skills and apply them on problems that are important and hopefully interesting to them. That's one of the key things. But then also just making sure that there are viable career paths even after the utilization, post-utilization, the assignments that come even beyond those two things. And that requires having a viable career path. So I think that that combination of things is probably the best way to tackle retention.
And I think that sounds like what we're going to hear from a lot of soldiers. They want to do something. They want to do something more. They want to do something that is valuable to the service. It sounds like that's not all too different than what we're going to hear from a lot of other MOSs, people who feel as though they're doing a job that matters. They're doing the job that they signed up for, that they're trained for, and they're being employed against that problem set. They feel like they're contributing, and that provides a sort of personal fulfillment that can offset some of the monetary costs that we might see. Is that how you've experienced it?
Yes. And I think that the solution for how to retain AI soldiers should be similar to the solution for how to retain other soldiers, because AI is a new discipline for sure, but I mean, it's a career field, just like any other career field. And so the same things that retain other people, the important work, actually doing the job that they expect to be doing, having opportunities to grow within their career field, all of these things are they work for other soldiers and career fields, and they should work as well for AI. It's just that AI is new.
The things that motivate soldiers regardless of their MOS. The model that the AI Integration Center has used, and the Army has used, I guess, for scholars and techs has been to use a broadening program approach or an opt-in approach. So everybody who's coming through this program has prior military experience. It may be a little, it may be a lot. You've got people at the beginning of their careers and at the end of their careers, but they're all walking in here with some vision as to what the military was. Does that military experience coming into this program make them more easily integrate into data teams, into an AI team once they get to the force? Or do you think that we would be able to take scholars and techs in the civilian sector off the street and plug them into a team? Does that military experience matter?
I think it does, certainly. One, there are certain things about being in the military uniformed about placement and access. And so if you were to take civilian, if you have a GS career field that was an AI specialist, those people could grow in their field for 20 years and become very senior people. But there is particular things about placement and access of green suitors in particular that you get a little bit of experience before coming to the AI program. So that gives you some sense of what is going on in the Army, which is very important. Then you get broadening opportunity through this program. For example, the utilization opens up your aperture to see other parts of the Army, so that when you return to either an operational data team or some other post-utilization assignment, you're able to contribute more. And being uniformed throughout that entire process, I think, gives you a different perspective, but also allows you to work on problems that non-uniform people would not necessarily be able to by virtue of just not being in the right rooms at the right time when people are describing their problems, or you can sit by other uniformed people and ask them, can I watch what you're doing so I can understand your workflow more? Or can you tell me about your problems? And those kinds of conversations it is easier to have them in a productive way when you have more Army credibility by having been uniformed and by being still uniformed. So, yeah, I think there is a unique thing that active duty AI talent is able to do that other government AI talent or purely private sector AI talent isn't able to do for the Army. There's something about internal AI talent that you're able to do by virtue of being uniformed.
Part of that service culture is what embeds itself in that team. That's great to hear. Well, Bryce, thank you very much for coming here today. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. I know you're very busy working with the Center for Army Analysis, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your day. I think we discussed a lot of great material, and hopefully these are things that leaders can take back into their organizations and put into effect.
Thank you very much.